Welcome to Fusion, a podcast for Relay FM members where I talk to hosts from various shows about a single topic. My name is Stephen Hackett, and this month I'm joined by Aline Sims from Originality and David Sparks from MPU Automators and Focused to talk about how we can prepare for natural disasters with technology. Aline, how are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. How are you?
Good. Got 7 inches of snow in Tennessee, which is very upsetting.
Yeah, ours all melted already, so I'm happy about that.
That's good. It's like beautiful the first day, and then by the eighth day, we're just like, I really would like to...
You tired of it?
Go get some groceries or something. David, how are you?
I'm great, Stephen. I was just thinking, what would happen if we got like 1 inch of snow in Southern California? I think it would probably just be a huge mushroom cloud, and that would be the end of us, because we are not prepared for snow at all. My heart went out to the folks in Texas, because I feel like it's another state that is not usually dealing with that kind of weather, and I think we would be equally as screwed over as they are right now.
Yeah, it's really scary. But we wanted to take the opportunity to see if we could apply our collective nerd knowledge and tech skills to being ready for this sort of stuff. You know, there's a wide range of scary things out in the world, and we just kind of want to talk about just the tech angle of what we can do to make sure we're ready from a technology perspective. And for my part, I think it starts with kind of knowing what's coming. Of course, with some sorts of things you don't know, but with weather, you usually have some indication. And I think that brings us squarely to the arena of iPhone weather apps. David, I know you and I have spoken about the new version of Carrot Weather on MPU, but Aline, do you have a favorite?
I use Carrot Weather too. I like the visualization. I don't even know where I have my snark settings, but like just having the widget on my home screen is amazing. And being able to go into the app and seeing the visualizations, it's just so well designed.
It makes you want to check the weather. That's how I sort of explain it to people who haven't used it.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree.
I think for me, at least in this part of the country, I know it's not true everywhere, but having a good radar is important. And one thing that Carrot does is it puts the radar basically with an equal footing with the forecast data. And a lot of weather apps either don't have a radar, or it's pretty limited. And I mean, you're paying for it. You know, weather data isn't free, and which I think is why some developers kind of downplay certain aspects of it. But for me, I've got two Carrot widgets on a stack. I've got the forecast one, which it has this really cool trick of changing to show you what it thinks you need to know. And then I have the second one, which is the radar, and I can kind of go between them. And again, I like you said, I love having it on the home screen of my phone.
And I also appreciate for one thing I've noticed in Seattle is that it's really easy to check for alerts in the app. Like it's got the like a red attention getting triangle with an exclamation point, and you tap on it and it pulls up any kind of thing that you might need to be concerned about in your area, which is really nice. And it's something that, you know, like the stock weather app on iPhone doesn't do for sure. So it's a really easy way to, you know, I still get a lot of my weather related news on Twitter, but it's nice that, you know, when I'm checking the weather app, if there's some kind of advisory that I can see exactly what that is. And it's incredible.
I haven't thought about this in a long time, but I used to, maybe you still can do it. Can you still get where like if a Twitter account tweets, you get it as a text message? I don't even know if that's... I think it may still be a feature.
You
I think they turned
notifications
off
notifications for people.
It used to, or still does, come via SMS, and I used to have that for like the National Weather Service in Memphis. So if there was a watch or a warning, you know, before weather apps got good, and this has been, you know, 10 years or something, it's like, oh, I could just get a text when, you know, their automated system says, hey, there's a watch or a warning, because at the time it was the fastest way to get that information. But now with Carrot and with a bunch of others, you can customize, okay, I do want to know about this or that, but I don't care about lightning, or I don't care about, you know, this within a certain mile radius. You can really fine tune it to your area. And I think that's pretty cool. I mean, I can't say enough good things about the new version of Carrot Weather.
Stephen, which weather app would you recommend though?
Honestly, I would recommend starting with Carrot Weather. It's version 5 is now free, so you can get a taste for it. Another one I really like is called Hello Weather, and it's similar, where it has a lot of information, but I think it may be even easier to read. I think for a lot of people, the stock weather app on the iPhone just may not be enough, especially if you're like me and you want to see a radar.
Well, the problem with Southern California is there really isn't a good earthquake warning system. I know that every couple of years they tell us that there's one. But having grown up in the land of earthquakes, I've never been warned of one. You know, usually I see, you know, something in the room moving that shouldn't be moving, and that's when I know we've got an earthquake. So early warning isn't that helpful, but for the nerd in you, it really makes preparation all the more important.
Yeah, I was looking at the USGS Shake Alert site, and I was reading this. I was like, I just don't know how they would know. Like, I mean, I'm not a scientist by any stretch of the imagination, but that does seem like something that would be really important to be able to tell in advance, but also very tricky to do so.
In 1987, I was attending California Polytechnic University, Pomona, which was like 10 miles away from the Whittier quake, which was a big one. We had a brand new teacher who had just moved in from Rhode Island, and it was like a 7:30 a.m. class because I was in the jazz band and I had to take the morning classes. And I'm in class. The teacher says, I'm really excited to be in California. The one thing that I'm afraid of is earthquakes. That was the week before. Then the following week we're in class, and that was a big quake, and we were close to the epicenter. And that's the only time I've ever been in an earthquake where the ceiling and the floor were going two different directions. You know, like you could see the racking in the room. Mm-mm. And as soon as it hit, like everybody kind of knew what it was, but the teacher, he didn't understand it at first. And it was a history class, and there were all these maps hung on the walls, and they just literally exploded off the walls because of the racking of the room. And man, the teacher didn't know what the hell he was doing. We all got under our desks, and then I looked up, and it was one of those college desks where the desk itself is like 5 inches wide, you know?
Oh, no.
And I looked up underneath it, and there were no screws in the holes. So as the earthquake is going on, I just put my hand up there and just pressed it, and it just popped right off. And then I was thinking, that was really stupid. But anyway, that was very funny.
Let me see if this thing is loose. Oh no, it is.
Yeah, and the professor he was gone after that semester. He stayed around. That was it, man. But earthquakes and technology. You know, one of the things I do is I think an important piece of nerd technology is how to communicate with people in an emergency. And one of the problems with earthquakes is as soon as the earthquake's over, everybody hits the phone lines. They want to call. And, you know, the phone lines go down almost immediately. The antennas get overloaded. But text messages can get through in the first couple of minutes. So I have created a script in Drafts, the Drafts app. And it sends a message out to my sisters and my immediate family. And it says, I'm okay, and gives my location. And I put it on my kids' phones, too. Hopefully, they'll be smart enough to do it if something happens. But one of the big problems after an earthquake is that you don't know if your family member's okay, or you don't know where they are. And I feel like having a tech system to get that information out quickly can really help, because if they wait 5 minutes, they will not be able to get it out.
That's a really good idea.
So one other thing that we could rely on for early warning, and this is we started with weather apps, which everyone has or everyone should have. And then we talked about earthquake early warning. Now I'm just going to go full nerd and say an emergency weather radio. I've got in the show notes the Wirecutter's roundup of good ones. But basically, these are radios that tune into emergency broadcasts. And so if you're in a storm or there's something going on, these are almost always all battery powered. Some of them even have like a flashlight and other stuff in them. And you can tune in and get access just over the air with radio. And if you think about, David, what you said, that phone service can go down you know, if something is going on, your internet service may go down, you know, your regular ISP.
Yeah, you definitely.
But as long as that radio antenna is still up somewhere, you should be able to tune in to this. And so it is an older technology, but in some ways better in a bad situation because it doesn't rely on, you know, the whole stack of the internet working. It just, you stick that antenna in the air and you should be good.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned Wirecutter. I think if someone was listening to this and they wanted to put together, and we're only talking about technology today, but if you really wanted a thorough disaster plan, Wirecutter has guides on like just general emergency preparedness. They also have one for wildfires, which is a big deal where I live. And they have recommended products and they've done the research. And I feel like you could, you know, rather than watching Jeopardy for a half hour, you could probably get on Wirecutter and order the stuff you need to be in much better shape.
Yeah, absolutely. Aline, can you think of any other ways to pay attention to what may be coming? Any other things that you utilize?
When we were talking about Twitter and receiving text notifications from the Weather Service, it got me thinking about something that King County has, which is the county I live in, is they will do text notifications for things. So if there are like major road closures because of disasters or emergencies or even protests, you can get a text notification about that. So maybe look into your area to see if they have a text-based alert system so that you can go in and sign up and configure your settings for the kinds of things that you want to be notified about. Because, you know, it's just, it's easy and you do it once and then you're set.
Yeah, I'll second that. We have that where I live too. And when we had the wildfires earlier this year, it was very helpful getting those updates from the county and the city.
Yeah, because I mean, communication just breaks down so easily. I mean, again, if you look at what's going on in Texas or in other parts of the country, you know, as we record this, but even just a regular year as things happen, having the lowest tech way possible to know what's going on is good. You don't want to rely on, oh, I've got to go to this website on my iPad, right? Like that may not be available to you all the time.
It's kind of like backing up your devices, you know, like one is none, you know, so have a belt and suspenders approach to staying informed about what's going on.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. So let's talk a little bit about tech itself. We've talked about kind of getting word of what's going on. But what are some things that y'all do to make sure that your tech is ready in case stuff hits the fan? What about you, David?
You know, the main thing is power, right? For technology, you want to be able to have it work. I mean, we've talked already about concern about signal, but also just you want to have juice in the devices. I've got a collection of external batteries that I've kind of picked up over the years when there's one on sale or something. And I actually cycle those and charge them monthly. So at any time, I can pull out a brick or two of juice out of my little drawer. Also, a couple of years ago, I bought a solar charger, just kind of on a whim. It's just another thing that's like kind of on my radar and it was on sale. So I bought one and I've tested it several times and it works great. I can just lay it out in my backyard and get a phone working off of it. But, you know, power is the thing. And I guess another piece of that is UPS if you've got plugged in computers. But I think the key thing for me in the emergency situation is I want my tech to go with me and to have juice.
I have not checked out the portable solar charger scene. So I'm putting that on my list to check out.
It's pretty nice. I mean, the one I have now is like 4 years old and it still works fine. And if we were in a situation where my batteries ran out, I would be able to get power to my phone pretty quickly, so long as I have sunlight, you know. And if there's no sunlight, then I have bigger problems.
Or you live in Seattle.
Aline, what do you do as far as keeping power handy?
I make sure I pretty much exclusively keep all of my devices plugged in all the time. Apple is pretty good about making sure that they're doing things with software to make sure that batteries are being conditioned. So it's not like a concern like it was a decade ago, you know, if I keep my laptop plugged in all the time. I don't have a desktop computer. So if I, you know, if I had an iMac, I would have a UPS for it. But so my devices stay plugged in. I use my iPad Pro pretty much exclusively plugged in, attached to a keyboard. So that's like the first step is I'm never in a situation, and I'm also home all the time. I mean, not even in pandemic times. I work from home. You know, I don't go out a lot. So I'm very rarely in a situation where I'm like, oh, crud, my phone battery is at 5% and I have no way to charge it. So I kind of start ahead in that regard. And like David said, making sure that I have, you know, a battery that's always charged. I keep one in my purse that will charge my ginormous iPhone, I think, 1.5 times. So, you know, that'll last for a little while. I think the big thing is really, like, this whole episode is about, like, just thinking ahead and kind of observing in my day-to-day life what is important and what I might need, right? And so having my phone charged, that is important to me. If I were in a different situation, you know, it might be making sure I had medical equipment easy to access or whatever. But batteries, definitely my number one.
I think one thing I'd add to this is if you have a vehicle, have a way to charge devices with the vehicle. Right. That's been a thing this last, you know, week or so in Texas. You need to do it safely. If you're running a vehicle, you need to make sure it's outside and away from you, obviously. But I think like almost anyone with a phone, I've got a way to charge it in, you know, both of our cars. And I think that is something that I would probably overlook if I was, you know, really without power for quite a while. But it is an option. Not as good as having those battery banks and that sort of thing, but it is another way you can produce some electricity. There was an article floating around about people using hybrid vehicles because then you don't have to actually run it. You can have it in kind of EV mode, some of them, and charging devices in the car like that, which could be obviously a lot safer than, you know, running a traditional vehicle just to charge your devices.
Something I've been thinking about, my husband and I have been car free for 2.5 years. And then about 2 weeks ago, we ended up buying a Tesla. And so if there is a situation where we're without power for quite a while, I'm like, what are we going to do? You know, if it's a situation where we can't get to a supercharger or something, it might be interesting. I think if we're in that situation, though, we've got bigger problems.
Yeah. Congratulations on the Tesla. That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah.
But in a way, that's like the world's largest battery bank.
Yeah, that's kind of what Justin said when we were talking about this kind of thing, is he was like, you know, because I said something about having a battery or an inverter or something in the car. And he was like, you know, if our car runs out of juice and all of our electronic devices are out of juice, we have really big problems. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, and the way a lot of people are getting in trouble in Texas was they're using the car to heat themselves, where, you know, and getting carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yeah.
And an electric car, you can run a heater without, you know, there's no gasoline engine in there to create the problem. I feel like there should be like a German word for that feeling where you get itchy if your devices get below like 90% charge, because I definitely have that problem.
Oh, me too.
And so that helps. My dad used to always tell me, you know, always you should never have an excuse to have less than a half a tank of gas in your car. You know, my dad was a Midwestern guy and that was a very, you know, common sense thing he'd say. But I still think about it. Because if we did have a big earthquake or a big fire, I'd want enough gas to get away. And I try to this day to keep my car above a half tank. And I guess with an electric car, you'd want to do the same thing. Have at least a half charge in it at all times.
Yeah.
One thing that I think you could also do as a nerd is you could have your data, you know, your important data. You know, think about the types of disasters. And where I live, there are fires, earthquakes, you know, that kind of stuff where you would lose access to your house. And 1Password is a sponsor on Mac Power Users, but they have a great cloud service where you can upload all your like insurance and deeds and wills and all that stuff to the cloud so you can access it anywhere. I know Katie Floyd used to carry a keychain USB drive on her keychain that had her important documents encrypted on a keychain. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but you should have access to your key documents in case of an emergency. And that's something you can definitely plan for. I mean, you could even just put them on Dropbox if you wanted, but just, you know, find a way to have your stuff that if you have to run out the front door, you don't have to worry about finding the right, you know, insurance policy later when you're dealing with it.
If you do use 1Password, make sure that you have access to your emergency kit. So I'm one of those people who I have 1Password on all of my devices, right? But if something were to happen somehow where I lost all of my devices, I would be in rough shape. So making sure that I have, they give you it, what they call an emergency kit, and making sure that, you know, like my mom has that, or it's somewhere that I can get to it. So that I can get to my data is also a very important thing to have, because if you don't, then you're out of luck.
Right. That's the trade-off with secure storage like this, right? If you don't have the key, you're not getting in. Yeah, that's a really good point. And actually, as you said that, I sort of quietly typed in my to-do list, like make sure I know where my emergency kit is, because I'm sure I set it up, you know, years ago. I was like, I need to revisit that and make sure that's all still good to go.
Another thing you can do to prepare is, you know, also just generally have your data backed up offsite. How are you guys doing that?
I'm Backblaze all the way. I love it. I set it and forget it. I've never had an issue with it. I know that they're a really sponsor from time to time too, but like, I love that I can get, you, I can pull my data down with an internet connection, or I could request a hard drive that they would ship to me. It's so nice to have that reassurance. We also have a time machine, like a local time machine backup. And I also have an SSD that I occasionally remember to use SuperDuper to clone my my computer's hard drive to. And one thing I've been thinking about doing is getting a second SSD and keeping a copy of my hard drive in my go bag so that if something happens and I don't have time to gather my computer, I just grab, you know, my backpack with my emergency stuff in it and I've got my hard drive right there. And then my barrier is really getting a computer, not like getting a computer and getting an internet connection and, you know, I've just got it all right there ready to go.
Yeah, I recently did a post at MacSparky on all my backups, but one of the key bits is like I've got the internal storage on my computer and an external SSD that combine for my primary storage. But having gone through that exercise, now I know if I just back up the internal and external drive, I have all of my data. So I have like a monthly process where I archive all of that onto a spinning drive. I got a couple 5 terabyte spinning drives that just hold are big enough to hold all my data. And I just keep one offsite and one local. So if I had to run out the door, I could get that spinning drive and have all my data. But like you, I also pay for Backblaze. I love the idea of belts and suspenders when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so much on our computers we can't easily replace, right? I mean, if I think about like where our important documents are, where family photos are, like all that stuff, it's all on the computer, right? And so I want that data safe and sound. So I do what y'all do. I have a set of offsite drives that I update. And then I've got Backblaze protecting everything as well. And I know that if something happens, I don't necessarily have to worry about, you know, where's my computer? I know that the data is elsewhere and it means that I can focus on things that Backblaze can't back up, you know, like family members or the family heirlooms or something, you know, can't back up people with Backblaze. Turns out they don't support it.
Oh,
actually I have myself on a Western Digital 2 terabyte drive.
Do you?
Just in case.
David's secrets revealed.
I bought the 4 terabyte, but it turns out I only needed 2.
You got room to grow.
Yeah. As you become a, you know, more mature person, you take up more hard drive space.
There you go.
The one thing I would throw in here too, just because I actually recently had this issue come up, unrelated to like disaster kind of stuff we're talking about today, is you cannot beat a real flashlight. Like, it's great that your iPhone has a flashlight, but if your phone is your tether to the outside world, using it as a flashlight for 3 hours, probably not the greatest decision. And so for a long time, I've kept an LED flashlight in my nightstand and one in the glove box of my truck. And I went to go reach for that one the other day, and at some point I used it, or someone in my family used it, and it's just like not there. And he was like, oh, I need to find this. And I ended up, you know, finding it. It was hiding out in like the kitchen. Everyone has that kitchen door with a bunch of junk in it. My flashlight was living in there. But I make sure that I have, you know, battery powered flashlight in the house at the ready and one in the car. And I think, you know, relying on your phone is handy. And I certainly do it all the time. But in a situation where, you know, things are sort of out of the ordinary, I wouldn't want to rely on it.
All right, erase the subject. Can I talk about flashlights for a minute?
Please.
Okay, if you have not bought flashlights for a few years because they've been in your phone, number one, you're in for a pleasant surprise, because LED flashlights are amazing. And they're lighter and they're brighter. They're great. But also, people have fetishized flashlights in a very strange way over the last 5 years, where you can buy a $150 LED flashlight, which is bananas, in my opinion. You don't need it, right? But for $20, you can get an amazing flashlight that runs on a couple AA batteries and is way brighter than your old mag lights, you know, that were like 15 pounds. It's amazing.
Yeah, you could use as a weapon if you needed to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how much there. The other thing I would recommend, and I put this in my go bag and my emergency kit, again, around $20, a headlight flashlight. They have a strap on them you can put around your head. As nerdy and geeky as that sounds, if you're in an emergency situation, having a flashlight strapped to your forehead is really helpful. So that's all I'm saying, man.
We got a couple of those for like the kids for when we go camping. And a couple of months ago, I needed to work on something under the truck, and I was like holding a flashlight. And then I had that thought of like, wait a second, we have like headlamps. And I busted one of those out. I was like, oh, wherever I look, there's light. What a great idea.
I was just thinking, like, for behind the TV, you know, when you do the you get like a new gaming console or something, you do the entertainment center reset and you have to climb back there.
Oh, that's good.
Good use for it, yeah.
I'm just going to wear one all the time, I think.
Honestly, it's like way more useful than a regular flashlight. It's like, that's what you should have in your junk drawer. You should have a headlamp. Anyway, I think that's my the end of my screed on flashlights. But don't buy a $150 flashlight. I mean, I've never seen one.
What do they do?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. Maybe they're brighter, but not bright enough.
Yeah, and I think if you spend enough money, you get into like it has a it has like a AA style battery, but it's rechargeable over USB. I have mixed feelings on.
Yeah, that's a downside.
Yeah,
really.
I say for this use, I would prefer regular batteries, so I know that if they're fresh. But I mean, I got lots of stuff that's rechargeable in my life. Almost everything is, it feels like, but in this particular area, I don't think I want to rely on that.
So we've talked about a couple of things that I think technology can help us with that isn't directly related to a disaster or emergency itself. And that is things like, I looked in the glove compartment for my flashlight and it was gone. Or I remember to do my super duper backup or whatever. And one of the things that I really struggle with is experiencing the passage of time the way that a lot of people do. So oftentimes I'll think I did something a couple of weeks ago and it was 6 months ago. So technology can help us in that. It gives us reminders and productivity apps. And so I think one thing that I would encourage people to do, you know, life gets busy even if you don't have time passage experience issues, set up reminders to back up your technology, to charge batteries, to check batteries, to change batteries, to audit your kits, you know, have supply checklist in your to-do app of choice, so that you can go audit your kit every, I don't know, 3 to 6 months and make sure that all of your supplies are there. If you have emergency rations, if you have medicine or ointments in a first aid kit, you can put expiration dates in those and set reminders so that you're always ready and you're never in a situation where you're trying to use a flashlight and the battery's dead or your emergency rations expired 2 years ago or whatever. Just use technology to be proactive about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big issues people are having in Texas right now is drinkable water. And this is something that I think wherever you live, you should have your own water stores for an emergency. But that is definitely something that you have to check on. You can't just leave it there 10 years.
Yeah, that goes for a lot of stuff. I mean, it even goes for fuel if you have a generator or something, right? A lot of this stuff just doesn't have an indefinite shelf life. And I think it's a really good idea to have like a recurring reminder somewhere. I have that for my offsite backup. You know, every couple of weeks it says, hey, you need to go do the thing. And in the busyness of life, I just wouldn't think about it otherwise, right? Or what I would do is I'd be on an episode like this, like, oh yeah, I should do my offsite backup. It's been 18 months or something. And so I think having some of those things just periodically come up to check on, I think that's a great suggestion.
And this is also a great thing to include your kids on, you know, if you've got kids, because everybody who has kids has like one kid who's that kid. Like if you give them this power, they will use it, right?
Yeah.
And you put them on the system, say, hey, you're responsible for the flashlight batteries and you're responsible for checking the water every 6 months or whatever. And you'd be surprised. First of all, I think it helps the kids and it helps you too.
Cool. Well, I think that will do it. Kind of a weird one this month, but I thought with everything going on, it'd be good to touch base on this and see if, you know, our tech expertise could be useful. Hopefully it is.
Be safe, everybody.
Yeah, for sure.